You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
My name is Risha Rainey, and I'm the only Black member of the Daughters of the American Revolution in the room. Everyone has to carve out a path. So there were other Black members before me. There aren't many. So following in their footsteps is also making sure that others can fall behind me and join the organization. And anecdotally, the women of color are having a very positive experience. Of course, every individual will have a different story, but the majority are very supportive of the organization and feel very welcome and embraced by the women.
I'm probably one of the few people I know who still looks forward to my Sunday newspaper. Not a digital copy that I read on my phone, but the real finger-staining, loud crinkling, section-by-section newspaper. The Sunday paper for me is a treat to be enjoyed while lounging in bed and sipping hot lemon water. So one day when we were going through all of the Only One stories that are being submitted to us, thank you for those, by the way. We love reading them. It was Scott's idea to record and release a few of them occasionally, but always on Sundays, and call them our Sunday edition. And because they're only 30 minutes long, our hope is that you can enjoy them while sipping your morning beverage, going for a walk, or even just enjoying a lazy Sunday at home. Please enjoy today's Sunday edition, and be sure to listen every Tuesday when we drop another brand new episode of The Only One in the Room. We're talking to Risha L. Rainey. How are you?
I'm doing great tonight.
Oh, good. Really good to have you on. So I know you're a STEM girl, but here's my question for you before we start the interview. Would you rather do without heat or AC for a year or your smartphone? Heat and AC, rather. Sorry. No heat, no air conditioning, or no smartphone.
It's only two choices, not three.
Okay. No smartphone.
Really?
Really?
Wow. Was that hard?
No, it wasn't hard at all.
If my
loved ones can reach me through, let's say, a landline,
yes.
That's fine.
That's good enough for you?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, that blows my theory about that.
So. Wait, where do you live, Risha?
I live in Maryland near Washington,
D.C. It's going to be cold sometimes.
And humid sometimes, right? I can see why air conditioning and heat
would be really important.
I don't like to be cold when I'm inside. Mm-hmm. I do not mind being cold during a winter sport, such as skiing. I am down.
Right.
I can go a negative 12 degrees skiing in the Canadian Rockies. But when I'm inside and getting cozy, I don't like to be cold.
I totally hear that. Well, thank you for that. I am Laura Cathcart-Robbins, and this is the Only One in the Room special Sunday edition. But I'm never the only one in this room because, as usual, my boyfriend, producer, and co-host, Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, is here as well.
Hey, honey.
All right, so check this out. Engineer, scientist, and mathematician Risha L. Rainey is the president and owner of Inside Corporation, a systems engineering company, which is ranked top 4% of women-owned businesses nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, right? She is a member of DAR, or the DAR Daughters of the American Revolution, organizing secretary Maryland State Society, Maryland's first African-American state officer. She is a Harvard University non-resident fellow, W.E.B. Du Bois Research Institute at the Hutchins Center for African and American Research, Faculty of Arts and Sciences, Harvard University under-professor Henry Louis Gates Jr., who is the host of Finding Your Roots on PBS. She is also the host of the podcast Daughter Dialogues and founder of DaughterDialogues.com.
Right?
Wow.
Let's take a moment.
We are. We're taking a moment to honor all of that.
Good job, by the way.
Yes. Welcome.
Amazing.
Yeah. Welcome, Risha. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to start you off by asking you how you identify.
I identify as African American.
I just have to tell our listeners that I have many Google alerts set, and one of them is for the words "the only one in the room." Anytime those words appear together in an article or on television, I get an alert from Google letting me know. I'm always looking to see if someone's talking about the podcast, of course, but I got an alert that led me to an article about you. And it was talking about how you were the only one in the room, or that you felt like the only one in the room, I guess, at times at the DAR or in the DAR. I wish I had saved the body of the article so I could remember exactly how it was used. But I was so excited when I read the article and contacted you right away. And I'm so grateful that you said yes and that you would come on and tell us about your experience. So thank you. You grew up in an integrated neighborhood, right? Is that correct?
Absolutely, yes.
And you and I had this in common. You said that you weren't subjected to much, if any, racism while growing up. Is that right?
No, I wasn't. That's correct. My school was a mix of Black and white students. My neighborhood was Black, white, Filipino, and I really didn't feel any type of racism growing up.
Right. I had the same. I went to school in Cambridge, Mass, at the Cambridge Montessori School. I was the only Black kid in my school for a while and often in the class, but I felt just like a regular kid. There didn't seem to be much difference between me and my classmates other than the days that my mom would take my hair out. I think I told you about that, of its braids. And it was out in these huge puffs and everyone wanted to touch it. But I didn't feel slighted because of it or excluded because of it, because of race, rather.
Right. And in high school, we all dated each other. Mm-hmm. So it didn't matter the color of our skin. You know, white was dating Black and Black was dating Filipino.
Yeah.
And it just, no one ever stopped to say, why are you dating that white guy or that Black girl? Mm. It just didn't happen.
It's kind of idyllic, right?
Yes.
Where were you then? Where did you grow up?
In Maryland.
In Maryland, where you are now.
Yes.
Yeah, excellent. And then we did talk about you being first in your class at Georgia Tech, right?
No.
No. You're like, that is not true. Do not put that on the air.
No.
Where did I get that? I'm so sorry.
I don't know. But there was a class that I was taking, a particular course,
okay,
in which I was the only female and the only Black in the course.
Wow. That was a big stretch from that. But but you talked about still being comfortable being the only one in the room, even in those situations. Is that right?
That's right. I think I had a great foundation growing up where we talked about it didn't really matter the race, and I didn't experience racism growing up. So it built a confidence that I saw myself as everyone else, and I didn't think that they saw me any differently either. So I didn't know to be aware of racism for my particular situation. Of course, I knew it existed in the world,
right,
but I hadn't encountered it.
Interesting. Do you know how many engineers are Black women?
Yes, less than 1%.
Wow.
According to the National Science Foundation, less than 1% of Black women earn bachelor degrees in engineering.
When you go into that field, when you're in those rooms, you're probably going to have a solo experience in that respect, right?
Yes, a intersection of being the only woman in the room and the only Black person in the room.
Wow. Do you find that you're treated any differently, or are you just treated as a peer or a colleague?
as an adult, my experience has been much different than the childhood.
Okay.
I absolutely am treated differently when I walk in the room and I'm holding business meetings that are very driven towards technology or, like you said, the STEM field and business. Put that all together, they don't look at me as a peer. So I really have to prove myself or bring in other people that they can relate to in order to validate what I'm saying.
Oh, wow. So bring in somebody that they see as a peer?
Absolutely, yes.
So that would be probably another white male?
Uh-huh.
Okay. That's not uncommon, but it's still hard to hear in this day and age, you know, that that's what's happening.
Right.
We're going to take just a quick break to tell you about a cool new product that Scott and I discovered. And we'll get back to our guest's amazing Only One story in just a minute.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Do you like science fiction? I'm Carrie Bechet, and if you loved movies like Arrival or Interstellar, then you're going to want to check out my podcast, Hypothetical. On Hypothetical, we tell speculative sci-fi stories interwoven with real science. New episodes every Tuesday, available wherever you get podcasts.
So let's switch to DAR. Tell me, how did you find out that you're a direct descendant of President Thomas Jefferson's grandfather?
My father kept telling me when I was growing up, you know, you're related to President Thomas Jefferson. You know, you're related to President Thomas Jefferson, over and over. And I just didn't pay him any mind. Mm-hmm. And then my cousin did 20 years of research before the internet by going to courthouses and libraries to research the family and look through census records and deeds and land records. And that's how he discovered it, through all of that hard work.
Wow.
It didn't really resonate with me until I was on a sailing trip and randomly ran into a great nephew of Marian Anderson, who has a long history with the Daughters of the American Revolution.
Yes.
When she was not allowed to perform at Constitution Hall, which is owned by the DAR, in 1939 because of her race. She was a Black opera singer. And I met a family member and they encouraged me to, why don't you join the DAR? And some of the family members, so let me be clear. And I considered it then because it was pretty profound to me that the family would try to encourage me to join an organization which had offended their or discriminated against their ancestor.
Mm. So this was Marian Anderson, one of her descendants.
That's right.
And she had not been allowed to perform at this venue.
Correct.
Didn't Eleanor Roosevelt resign from the DAR in protest, right?
That's right.
After she was not allowed to perform. She was an amazing opera singer. She was obviously African-American. It was then, when this person came to you, that you decided to investigate?
Yes. And that's when I said, well, maybe I should join. You know, I'm getting all these different signals that this is something that I should do. I wasn't quite sure why I was joining because my interests just honestly didn't align with that of the organization. They are really into genealogy. Mm-hmm. They are really into history. And that's just not my strong point or happy place as an engineer, as a mathematician. Right. I'm just not oriented that way. Mm-hmm. And so I wasn't sure what was I going to get out of this experience because I didn't even share the common interest that the rest of the members had. And of course, the demographic looked very different.
Very different.
Me.
Yeah.
It's made of 180,000 members. It's one of the world's largest women's service organizations. Mm. And of course, the overwhelming majority of those women are white.
Right.
And that didn't really bother me or wasn't a concern of mine. I just didn't know. The majority of them were, I think at the time that I joined, the average age was about 69 or 70 years old.
Oh.
And I was joining in my 30s. So I wasn't sure exactly how we were going to connect if we didn't share a common interest.
Yeah.
And I was more worried about the interest in, like I said, the history and genealogy just not being my focus. But then after I joined, I connected with the women because they're women and I enjoy them and I enjoy their friendship and they became true friends and some of my closest friends. Yes, they were 70-year-old white women.
Yeah.
That loved genealogy and history, and they were some of my best friends, and they still are.
Well, that is just really interesting to me. And can you just tell me what the DAR is for someone who doesn't know?
So the Daughters of the American Revolution accepts any woman who is 18 years or older who can prove direct lineal descent from an ancestor who contributed to the American Revolution.
Contributed, meaning they didn't have to fight in it?
They didn't have to fight. They could provide supplies. For example, we have a very good notable patriot, as they call it. That would be the ancestor who contributed to the war. We have one that I can't wait to talk about in the future who is an American Indian patriot who's female.
What?
And her contribution was, I might get this wrong, but she was in the trenches of the battlefield chewing on like the bullets or the bullet casings to sharpen them because they became dull and the soldiers had to reuse it. So she was chewing on these bullets. I hope they weren't lead to try to sharpen them. So that was a contribution to the war.
It's strong teeth.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
So people may not realize, or most people do not realize, that 6,000 men and women of color fought in the American Revolution, but the majority of the women of color in the DAR don't descend from patriots of color. They descend from white men.
Right, right. As do you.
Yes.
Really interesting. So this is an organization that has, for me, it has a reputation, a predominantly white organization that celebrates Southern heritage. This is how I hear it, or how I've always observed it to be. I thought it was a racist organization.
I shouldn't say everybody, but a lot of people still think that it is.
Yeah. My thinking was before I talked to you that even if they would admit me, I wouldn't want to join because I would feel like I would be supporting something that celebrated a time in history where people that look like me did not have any rights or privileges. How do you respond when people ask you why you joined, aside from the story that you just gave me? Is there a moral conflict at all?
For me, not so much, because everyone has to carve out a path. So there were other Black members before me. There aren't many. So following in their footsteps is also making sure that others can fall behind me and join the organization. And anecdotally, the women of color are having a very positive experience. Of course, every individual will have a different story, but the majority are very supportive of the organization and feel very welcome and embraced by the women. And it really is a women's service organization. So what they do is promote patriotism, education, and historic preservation. So that is really their mission. And people are passionate. The members are passionate about the different activities that we do. For example, my chapter supports a women's shelter and we donate supplies and make sure that we're caring for our community and historic properties. We clean up the properties. We do conservation projects and trying to make sure the honeybee population stays healthy. So you can get really passionate about these different projects and find a place in the DAR. And again, feel very welcome. And this is kind of the stereotype that I want to dispel that is very common, mm-hmm. that people think, oh, it's a racist organization. There's some white women that won't even join because they feel like they don't want to be aligned with a organization that's seen as racist. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to say that is not the organization as far as a national policy or agenda. Of course, you might run into individuals. It's a body of individuals that makes up the organization. And of course, you might run into your individual circumstances or situations. But as a whole, that's not what members of color are experiencing.
That's really interesting. I'm so glad you clarified that. And I'm reminded, this is another question I wanted to ask you. We had a guest on, about 6 months ago. Basically, she's the only Black humanities teacher at her school. And every year on the history classes, we're sent to a reenactment of the Civil War. It's a place where that's all they do. It's a big open field somewhere out of town. And they reenact the Civil War. And she went there for her first year. And she got really angry that they were reenacting a time where people that look like her had been enslaved. And she asked that they stop doing that. And I know that's not directly your experience, but did you ever experience any of these things that are being honored and protected as that? Did you ever say, oh, this is not okay to preserve this memory this way, or this is crossing a line? Was there ever anything like that?
Sometimes people do kind of cross over their feelings about the Civil War into the Daughters of the American Revolution because they just feel like it's all enveloped and cased into one big war. Mm-hmm. But the fight for independence for the country, there was a lot of participation of people of color in it. It was a lot of representation there. And of course, there's a conflict that, well, you're fighting for a land which was rightfully that of the Native Americans or American Indians. And I have that 11% of that is a part of my DNA as well. So there is the conflict of, well, we fought for a country that we took over from the first people that were here. That's mainly my conflict that I have just with the founding of the nation. But I'm also proud of the contributions that our ancestors made in order to get us to where we are today and to found this country.
Yeah. I want to ask you next about, you were trying to bring attention to what you guys were doing, I think. And you were pitching an article about, was it about an activity? I don't remember what the article that you were pitching was about.
Right.
What they glommed onto was the fact that you were a Black member of this group, right?
Yes.
Was that the article that caught Henry Louis Gates Jr.'s attention?
That's correct. That was back in 2013, the Washington Post. I was trying to bring attention to my chapter to attract more members locally, and I just lived in the market, or I live in the market of the Washington Post. So I dialed them up and I said, come see our chapter and what we're doing. We're doing great things. And then they were like, tell us more about yourself. And somehow we got into a discussion, and I don't know how it came up, but that I was Black. And they were like, well, wait a minute, you're Black and the Daughters of the American Revolution? Now, that's the story.
Right.
And then they found out how I descended from Thomas Jefferson's grandfather. And they said, oh, wait, wait, wait. So this ended up on like 3/4 of the front page of the Metro section of the Washington Post because they did not cover anything about my chapter. And they were just astounded. And yes, Professor Henry Louis Gates Jr. took notice of that back in 2013.
Wow. And then so what happened after that?
I contacted them and said, wow, you really took notice of my article. And then I was offered a fellow to apply to be a Harvard non-resident fellow. And my application and project got approved.
Amazing. I'm not really sure what that means. So would you explain what that means? I know it's a big deal, but I want to know more.
Yes. So I am working under the direction of, as you stated, the W.E.B. Du Bois Center for African and African-American Research. And I am contributing to scholarship by collecting the stories of Black women and women of color who are members of the Daughters of the American Revolution.
Wow.
And as you know, of course, they descend from an ancestor who contributed to the American Revolution. So there's only a finite number of these these women right now, and I am documenting their narratives in order to preserve their history. And those stories will be preserved in the Schlesinger Library for Women at Harvard University, which is arguably the largest women's archive in the world, I believe.
Amazing. What a huge, tremendous responsibility that is,
yes.
Right?
I didn't know it was going to be that huge until I just came up with a project idea, and then it has taken a life of its own. And then once I started kind of collecting these different oral histories, it blew me away. And my not being a history buff, I was still enamored with and fascinated with what I was learning from these women.
Well, I was just going to say, for someone who is not a researcher,
no,
and who's not a history buff, you have turned Mm-mm. out.
What is yes. this, right? What am I doing? I don't understand how I got myself here. Isn't it strange?
Well, you're in the thick of it. And it's uncharted, right?
In deep. I am in really deep.
That's awesome, though. So is that how you created Daughters Dialogue Podcast?
That's correct. So I created Daughter Dialogues Podcast in order for it to be more accessible, these oral histories, to the public at large, instead of just having to access it as a researcher in the library.
Right.
So it will still be deposited in the library. So that will go on for, I don't know, generations to come, not just decades, but it will go on for hundreds and hundreds of years beyond our existence, that the library will be able to preserve it. Mm. But I wanted the generation now that we're in to hear what these oral histories are. And so the podcast was just a great idea to disseminate it more widely so people could access it pretty quickly.
Yeah. What does it mean to you personally when a woman of color, or a Black woman specifically, says that they're interested in joining because of you?
Oh, wow. That's always a very big compliment, because as you heard, I never intended to go down this road. I'm such an odd member of the DAR, because the rest have been researching their families for decades or years, and they feel like when they join that it legitimizes their research and puts their place in history. And I did not have that story. I just kind of fumbled my way in and stumbled in and became a member. So it's really, I feel very intimidated, because I'm just so out of my place, and I'm honored to feel like I will be, I don't know, remembered in history for doing this work. And that's kind of interesting, isn't it?
It really is. It's like you kind of wandered into some place to check it out, and now you're stuck holding the door for other people who look like you. Like, you're at that door as they walk in, representing.
Yes. Right.
And, you know, for you to go into an organization that has a stigma around it, at least for a lot of the people that I know, and have a great experience like the one you're describing, and then welcome other people who look like you, who may have had the same misconceptions or preconceptions about the Daughters of the American Revolution. I mean, that's pretty cool that you get to
right.
do that.
And then how did I come in and just, I was a lazy member sitting at the meetings because I really didn't know why I was there anyway. And then the chapter got in trouble, and I said, you know, I think I could turn this thing around as a businesswoman. My mind just saw, okay, I need to build a team. I need to build excitement and friendship and motivation, have a mission for the chapter. Like, I know how to do that.
Yes.
And so I put my business skills to work to save the chapter. Nothing to do, like I said, with the history and genealogy.
Right.
And so that really took off, because the average attendance for a chapter is about, any chapter that I've seen in the state, is about average of like 30%, maybe 25%. Mm-hmm. I had chapter attendance around 75%.
Hey.
So that's how I got noticed for higher positions that I was not striving for.
Right. You know, it's just like in the entertainment business, when you have a great idea and someone tells you, well, then go ahead and do it.
Right.
And then you produce that's something right. fantastic, and they're like, okay, you're a producer.
Right.
Do
right.
it some more. Well, we're just about at the end, but Risha, I really think you might have to kind of reframe the way you think about yourself, because like it or not, this is part of your identity now. You are that researcher. You are into genealogy. You are telling those stories and preserving them for everyone who comes behind you. You know, it's
right.
really, It's incredible. And I know that the work you're doing in your business is really important. And I am blown away by that. But this is something that people who don't know anything about will be able to walk in to, what's the library? I forgot the name already.
The Schlesinger Library.
Schlesinger Library for Women. And be like, oh, what's this? And then, you know, read document after document, listen to story after story, and find themselves in those stories. Oh, that's me.
Yes.
Or I have that. Or I need to look and see if maybe that's me. That's just really cool. I'm so impressed with you.
Thank you.
Yeah. And really appreciate you taking all this time to speak with us and school us on what's going on. Tell me what's next for you. You laugh.
Because it seems like I never know and I just fall into it. And I'm excited to know what is next. My term is ending as the state officer. And that's a very sad time. We just had our state conference where I was the only Black person in the room for 3 days straight out of 180 members. But they're my sisters. I didn't look around the room and notice that at all until we just talked about it now. And I don't think that they noticed me in that way because they're used to me now. Mm-hmm. I've been around for 10 years. With them, or 12 years, I should say.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what's next after my position ends with the state. I will continue collecting more oral histories until I can't anymore because I get tired or have to actually make some money again and pay attention to my business because it's not funded. There isn't a grant for it.
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
I don't have a team to produce the podcast. It's just me.
Yeah. Well, I thought Scott was going to say something about that.
I was going to say that. I know that's a lot of work.
Yeah, it is a lot of work.
Boy, yes.
It is. Yes. It's a whole lot of work. People don't know.
They don't.
How much work goes into it.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, those good ideas that people say, that's great, go do it.
Yeah.
They start to stack up like crazy.
Yeah. So you have this huge stack of work. You know, I did forget to ask you. I know that the DAR doesn't keep records of members by race, but do you have any idea kind of what percentage of the DAR are Black women?
That's like the number one question I get, and I can't
answer it.
So there's 180,000 members, but let's just say, for example, all we can do is extrapolate data.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's now I'm getting to things that I like to talk about numbers and math.
Yeah, she did just light up.
I know, she did. Yeah.
So let's just say at a national conference, you might have 3,000 people there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And out of that, maybe you'll see 40 Black members.
Okay.
So if you kind of take that and interpret how many and extrapolate out of 180,000, how many you might have.
Mm.
I haven't done the math, but that's just where you should go with
okay. it. Okay. I'll have Scott do the math because he's better than me at that.
Right. And I think I have the contact information for, if I had to really guess based on the contact information that I've collected and those that I probably haven't found yet, maybe 200 or 300.
Okay. All right.
Out of 180,000.
Well, I asked the right person because you have that mathematical mind. So that's great.
Right.
Thank you for that.
Yes.
Tell me where people can find you.
At daughterdialogues.com. Now, people get that mixed up and put the S in the wrong place.
I just did that,
often. Yes. Right. So I kind of regret, like, why is that unnatural for people to put the S on the end? So there's only one S, and that's the very end. So it's daughterdialogues.com.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And that'll be in our show notes. In case you get the S wrong, you just click on the link. Thank you so much. Thank you for this.
Thank you.
My dad will be pleased.
This is awesome. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Thank you for listening to The Only One in the Room. Please join us each Tuesday and Sunday for an incredible brand new Only One interview. And every Friday for On My Nightstand, where I'll be reading something that I love. If you have an Only One story you'd like to share or a piece of writing you'd like to submit, please send it to theonlyonepod@gmail.com. From all of us at The Only One in the Room, we wish you dopeness, health, and prosperity.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.